That's what we needed to know. And that as well, of course. William Coles is with us in the airwave sign that we actually call Siren Radio, all the way from Edinburgh. How are you, William Coles?
I'm very perky, thank you so much. How are you?
Good. I've been actually looking at your website, William, and I have to say, it needs a bit more updating. It needs to be... just because I've been looking at that and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, you're looking very suave and sophisticated and so on, but I'm just thinking that you've done much, much more since actually, writing The Woman Who Was the Desert Dream, a love story set in the Marathon des Sables. You know, we need to be current, you know. I mean, it's great in terms of archive material, but for me, it kind of just lacks a certain contemporaneous impact.
Yes, well, websites. I'm trying to talk to people in person and waste my time on the web.
Really? Waste your time on the web? Wow. I wonder if
Loitering away my time on Facebook and stuff like that. No. I'm trying to avoid that.
Right. So are we saying, William, that actually you're heading towards the routine of actually using postcards or tapping the table as a way of communicating?
Yeah, postcards, letters, that sort of stuff. Sometimes the phone, like now.
Wow.
The internet,
Well, you know, I mean, I can identify with that. If it wasn't for the internet, I wouldn't have actually found out via a medium, a range of things, actually. First of all, via email, that one of our colleagues couldn't actually make it this evening. That was Beverly Spencer. I also had to obviously talk about her creative writing and journalism. Something cropped up. It happens. And Kira Olsbrook is busily working on various events, etc. So she sent me an email. And then even McDonald sent me a text. So it's like all three sort of aspects have been sort of worked through in terms of actually saying that she's a bit poorly. Get well, Eva. She's supposed to be listening. I wonder if she is. She could send us another text just to confirm she is listening, but that's probably too cruel.
Because she really isn't. She's probably not.
Yeah, exactly. Why would she, basically? She's a poorly lass at the top of the hill. You don't want to actually have the midweek. Although, I don't know. Heal, Eva. Heal. There, I've sent the message out there. Positive vibes. That wasn't heal as in H-E-E-L, by the way.
That's what I thought you were saying.
No, like, no. No, that's... I have a completely different voice if I'm actually using the channeling ones in a sit in terms of the days of canine training, of course. Anyway, William, as you can tell, you might have actually heard the dulcet tones there of she who has made it to the studio and this time isn't strangling herself on headphones because she's in full glorious technical stereo. It's Eloise Sheehan. So there we are, William. All's well with the world. And I think it's fair to say, Eloise, you're quite connected, aren't you, really? To the web, to the internet, to, you know, the socials and so on.
I'm struggling with this booking, so I'd say not.
She's trying to actually book into a Great Yarmouth hotel. It'll take her years.
It's too much choice. I don't understand what I'm doing.
Where there is choice, there is misery, as many Buddhists would actually say. William, can you actually persuade... Well, not persuade. We won't talk about persuade. Can you actually share with Eloise, you know, ways to actually cope with this? Would you actually say, Eloise, do a digital detox straight away, put it down, and just phone them up?
Yeah, just phone them up. It's a much nicer way to do it, and you'll get a much nicer route.
That requires me to actually have a phone call with someone, which I can do right now, but not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be a bit off if you did it right now in the middle of the show. You know, clearly.
Well, you could broadcast it, and we could admire
that'd
your
be great. You could help.
We could see. Yeah. We could see whether you've got the silver tongue or not.
It's the fact that there's the same price, William. And I can have three different rooms. I can have a single bed, a double bed, or a single and a double bed at the same price.
Yeah,
so I could have two beds, and I could just jump from one to the other.
Yeah, that's what I tend to go for, because there's so much fun, you know, so many ways just by having that. But still, you know, never let it be said that I want to sort of persuade you in any way, shape or form from that point of view. But it is an interesting line, William, in terms of, say, the booking of the hotel room to actually go through that. Who would have thought we'd start off the programme with respect to that in this... this day where clearly we have had interesting Brexit news yet again from that point of view. Still, never mind. William, what are you getting up to these days? I mean, apart from ace writing and parading through the streets of Edinburgh like a man with a mission.
I'm getting told off by the security people in the museum for running around. When it's cold and when it's wet, it's a great place to play hide and seek. The
Exactly.
And so we race around, and then if you get caught by the guards, they don't like it a lot. And just a few days ago, this woman said to me, "I have to tell the children off to stop running, but I can't believe I'm having to tell you stop running." But if I don't run, I can't catch the kids.
This is so true. Do they have no sense of fun, these Scottish people in Edinburgh these days? Do they not realise that authors have the right, particularly if they're male authors of a certain chronological time of their lives, to actually run through museums with their hair flowing as the wind sort of carries them through? I mean, surely it's the prime of Miss Jean Brodie, but, you know, the male perspective.
Yeah, yeah. I think what they're worried about is what happened to the Portland vase in the British Museum, which was knocked over about 100 years ago by a tramp who attacked it with his stick, and it smashed into 1,000 pieces.
Yeah. Which isn't great, I suppose, really. I mean, it's maybe one
that would be bad.
It's maybe one of the reasons why the current sort of negotiations to do a location report at the Royal Academy in London are kind of having one or two little sort of interesting lines there. We don't smash vases, you know. I mean, Louise might occasionally sort of not necessarily relate to everything Richard Fitzwilliam says, but partly of that, all's well with the world. You know, it'll happen. It'd be great. You know, it's an important thing. Louise, any questions you want to put to William about his life? The state of the nation, Edinburgh, running in museums. I mean, he's your go-to man.
I'm just hurt that you got my name wrong, but that's fine.
Eloise!
How dare you? I'm just interested.
La, 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 la. Eloise, la, la, la.
Sorry, oh, I hate that song.
A damned moment there.
Oh. William, let's ignore Alex.
Let's ignore him. He could just be like he's like a hyperactive child. He wants attention.
He is. What are you doing the rest of the week? What is your weekend plans?
Well, the weekend plans is, we're kicking off with the rugby at 8:30, the England against the All Blacks. Up in Scotland, though, it's a different experience watching England because...
Sorry, I couldn't resist that. I mean, it's Scotland, Japan. Sorry.
Most Scots are cheering for anyone but England. Yeah, In Scotland, they'll be rooting for the All Blacks.
Yeah, and sadly, I think the All Blacks might actually do it. That's the regrettable system, but never mind. Yeah, it's happened. It's what it is. It is what it is, as many sort of people would say. Sorry, I had my microphone closed down there, but you tempted me back with respect to the mention of Scotland and the Rugby World Cup. I think it's hilarious, but still never mind. It'll come back to bite me, clearly, from that point of view, and I'm sure that Gregor Townsend will, when he writes his biography, sort of say, it all started when, you know, never mind.
It all started when, yeah, you were the person who gave Scotland the steel to get out of there.
Yeah, exactly.
Mediocrity.
And for the third time on the programme, Ukrainian cowboy will be mentioned. There we are. It'll happen. I say there's something will be happening in tonight's October the 23rd edition of the Midweek Drive in which Ukrainian cowboy takes centre stage. Say no more. Apart from the last two questions for William from Eloise, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, William?
I've loved it. Thank you so much for asking.
Will you be joining us again next week?
Yeah, as soon as the boss asks me. Thank you.
Excellent. And now, from Eloise to Louise.
When he saw her getting off the bus, it seemed to wipe away the years. Her face was older, just a little rough, but her eyes were still so clear. He drank his coffee and he hurried out, across before she walked away. Then he approached her like a little child, too scared for what he had to say. As if we were still lovers. She took a moment just to recognize the man she'd known so well before. lips to let him know she understood. And with her suitcase standing on the floor, embraced him like a lover would. He told Louise, "You look so good. It's just you, see. As if we were still lovers."
The Green Hornet, Bonanza, Murder, She Wrote, The Mod Squad, Honey West, Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
Personally, I think they should bring back Honey West, actually, Arthur. I think we should start the campaign now.
It was a good
series. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a good series. It was fun. The two civet cats were actually the heroes of it.
Mm. They were cool, of course, as was Anne Francis.
Yeah.
So, and the late Anne Francis doing all sorts of wonderful things, including, of course, being part of the Quinn Martin output for The Invaders.
Yeah.
As you know, what a fan I am of The Invaders, Arthur, you know, Quinn Martin production, Streets of San Francisco. But yes, bring back Honey West is the latest campaign we'll set up. And I suspect, Eloise, you've no idea who Honey West was.
It's going straight out of my head.
Arthur, would you like to just share with Eloise and possibly our listener the wonderment of Honey West, detective extraordinaire, and in 25-minute story episodes each week, she would singularly put to rights all the nefarious instances of crime in certain parts of America?
Yeah, actually, she was somewhat unique, in that misused word, in that there weren't very many lead actresses in a detective series, and so she was, and happened to be a terrific actress and very beautiful, but she was good at that, and the stories were intriguing in that they weren't the usual kinds of things. They were much more mysteries, and she had to solve those, and she had two partners, as I mentioned before, the civet cats, who really created havoc on the set. They used to get loose it's from the grinder and climb up.
It's when you got the talent and tuna fish that there's a challenge that's
yes,
there. You
know, right.
Tuna fish well, and the talent, where do you go to from that?
They would climb up to the flies and the studio right up to the very top, and we have to hold filming for about a half an hour until we can get them back down.
When you've got an ocelot there, what more can you actually say? You know, a pet ocelot called Bruce, as well as obviously rugged Sam Bolt. After the death of her father, Honey West took over his high-tech private detective firm, and the world never looked back since, at least for 30 episodes.
It's a shame it only got one season.
That's why I say I think the campaign starts now. Bring back Honey West. It's never too late to actually resuscitate. Which is a little catchphrase I think we'll use, actually, Arthur, for all manner of creative things. It's never too late to resuscitate, even if you're a vampire. And the reason I mention that, this Friday sees the launch of the animated version in cinemas of The Addams Family. Yes, they've come back yet again, Arthur, for another apparently very true to the original Charles Addams features. The Addams Family are resuming their time in the cinema on the big screen. Exactly. Silence.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
I hope.
Well, I haven't seen it. Have you? Did you see it?
Not as yet, but hopefully it's on my list of things to potentially check out. I mean, after still recovering from the Joker. Although, having said that, I could understand, you know, some American hosts of some nighttime TVs, as portrayed by the character in the Joker, whose name is a famous actor, whose name has eluded me, and he was in King of Comedy, and it's Robert De Niro, of course. Robert De Niro plays this particular line, and he ends up with an unfortunate ending, I should say. An unfortunate ending, although I can understand why the Joker actually did that. And that's what happens, you see, when you try to assassinate the Midweek Drive anchor person live on air. You hurt your fingers, Eloise. You know? It's karma, quite simply, karma in action. There's no messing about whatsoever. The webcams were in operation. You'd appreciate what was actually happening there. Spot on. So, Arthur, what else is happening now that you're having to cope in San Diego whilst Annette, of course, is celebrating 50 English years of Randall and Hotcock deceased over in
yes.
Britain.
Yes, you know, she had the 50th anniversary party at the O Street Studios this past weekend, and it was a sellout. Apparently, she said there was just line after line of people there and all that, and it went very well. And Ken Cope, who isn't too well, delivered a 10-minute talk on the telephone, and they played clips and things over it, and Ned said that went over very well. And then they had lots of people who had acted in it and directed and all of that there too. So it was a festive occasion.
I must admit that also the Annette Andre autobiography has also been getting rave reviews from Phil Leonis, actually in Los Angeles on the Chilpack Hollywood Hour. So, you know, he's finally managed to get around, having sorted out his eyesight challenges, to be reading through the autobiography. And yes, you know, great stuff there. So it just shows the quality, Arthur, of the combination of Annette Andre and yourself, Arthur Weingarten. It's immense. You know, that's the key thing.
I didn't actually catch it. Do you say that there's something here, that someone is reading it here?
The host of a podcast series called Chilpack Hollywood, Phil Leonis, who's a film director in his own right, I actually sent him a copy of Annette's autobiography for a wedding present, because I thought, what better way to actually sort of, you know, set off his life in person? Exactly. I thought it was important to actually do that. So we sent him a copy as a wedding present, and he has been reviewing the whole thing and was very, very impressed by the whole thing. So I'm just sort of sharing
isn't that
information.
That's terrific. Yep, that's terrific. That's wonderful. As a matter of fact, there's a paperback probably going to happen in the next couple of months.
That's even more wonderful.
That'll be another thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, wearing your producer's hat, Arthur, if somebody said, we want the rights to that particular story, we want Annette Andre's rights, who would you like to actually cast as a young Annette Andre? Is that, I can ask you this question while she's not in the country and not actually in the vicinity, you say.
I was just going to say that, you know, that's a danger.
Hugely, which is why we had to leave, we had to wait until Lynette was not even in that house at all. And she's well, I mean, she might be listening, I suppose, but hopefully, you know, with fingers crossed anyway, you know.
Right. You know, something I have no idea who a young Annette would be today. I have no idea. You fill me. You're much more au courant.
Well,
so tell me who.
I don't know. Yeah. So, Eloise, any thoughts from yourself?
No, just because you don't have a thought, you can't push it on.
No, I was thinking maybe Keira Knightley would be a possibility. I mean, she could do most things, I would have thought. Maybe she can channel the Australian accent, you know, maybe a sort of younger
version.
Oh,
that I have to take issue with.
Yeah, I thought you might.
I think Keira Knightley's sense of humour is a bit north.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. That's a fair point. Yeah. Exactly. I tell you what, we'll put it out there, and by the time we actually speak again, which will be close by Thanksgiving, maybe we might have an answer in terms of a casting call for all that point of view. But it's something to ruminate on from that point of view. We're not sure whether indeed Annette will be able to join us while she's over in Britain. Obviously, the invitation is always there. I mean, she's only about 126 miles away. So it's a lot closer than we are to your good self, Arthur, obviously.
That's true.
But, yeah, we'll see. We'll put it out there.
There is a bit of news Annette just told me a half hour ago.
Yep.
She's been cast in two feature films, so she will be coming back in January.
Hey, that deserves a round of applause. Or at least the solid cheers of two midweek drivers effectively saying, yes, this is good
news.
She
doesn't know the casting except for in one of them, Vanessa Redgrave, and she has scenes together. So that can't be too bad.
Well, I think, you know, the stuff that Annette could actually teach Vanessa about acting, it's huge. So I think even on that basis alone.
You're very kind.
It is. It's true. You know, so I think the Redgrave dynasty might just learn quite a lot from that perspective. So it's good news about that.
Yeah.
Arthur, it has been fantastic as ever. We're going to be heading off to Boston, actually. Not Baltimore, Boston, in a few moments to talk with another writer called Jeffrey Carver. In fact, specifically Jeffrey A. Carver and his whole sequence, The Reefs of Time, which has just been released. But meanwhile, Eloise, would you like to put those last two questions to Arthur Weingarten, please?
I would. Arthur, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I've had a terrific time. Thank you.
Great. Will you be joining us again soon?
I certainly will. With bated breath, I wait.
occasionally people ask us, what qualifications do we need to actually be on the Madrid Drive? You know, do we need to actually be Academy Award winners? Do we need to actually be Nobel Prize winners, etc.? All of whom at various times we've actually featured. But when you've got interests including science, space travel, astronomy, religion, nature, underwater exploration and flying, you've already become a done deal. When you actually produced awesome, fantastic issues such as the Chaos Chronicles, then clearly it's destiny that's going to bring Jeffrey Carver, Jeffrey A. Carver to be precise, to the Madrid Drive. Jeffrey from Boston, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent, and genuine delight to actually have you on board, because I was familiar with your Battlestar Galactica adaptation, which was great. But then, of course, thanks to the delightful Mickey, we got a whole range of other aspects, including The Reefs of Time, part one of the Out of Time sequence in the Chaos Chronicles, of course, book five, which I thought, well, you know, let's go back to the start of the Chaos Chronicles and let's find out a little bit more about the main characters. And I started reading, I've worked through the whole thing, and it's pretty much unputdownable, the whole tale, page after page of Neptune Crossing. And it's awesome. You know, I mean, I just feel, John Bandicoot, and I know occasionally I've seen, was there any notion in terms of the surname for John Bandicoot there, of those cute Australian marsupials, Bandicoots?
No, that was total coincidence. Right, they started calling him Bandicoot just because of the name. And I don't even know where the name came from. It popped into my head.
It works well. And so, JB, as we refer to him. Although I have to say, I have a particular fondness for the Quarks. Whether it's Charlie, C-H-A-R-L-I-E, whether it's Charlene, or whether it's Charlie with an I. Somehow, I feel that the way that Titan has actually been working through that, it's amazing. It's just wondrous. So congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That, and really good stuff from that point of view. But more than that, you've also been the host of science fiction and fantasy writing, an educational television series from that point of view. You also teach writing science fiction and fantasy, which is also online from that point of view. And even more wonderfully, you actually share the viewpoint of Eloise Sheehan, who's in the studio at present, about the views and your thoughts on Ad Astra, which I have to say, it's not great, Eloise.
It's not great.
I mean, it is one of those classic lines that's there where you think, I don't know. Ad Astra writes the textbook on how not to write plausible science fiction.
I agree.
It was such a disappointment. I was really looking forward to the movie. So I walked out with a lot to think about and a lot of disappointment that they didn't really work harder to make it plausible.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it defined as a kind of Heart of Darkness, an adaptation of the Joseph Conrad epic, but obviously set in space, which is one way forward. But I do like, I mean, this was one of my particular gripes as well, the notion of the chase on the moon from that perspective, which, again, the notion that if you've got a piratical situation on the moon, why would you actually go in a relatively easy buggy? As a transport, as opposed to flying on something, you know, if you need
Let's
to
expose ourselves.
Exactly. Again, some of the other sort of aspect, I mean, the notion of if you have a world critical need to get from point A to point B on the moon, and you know the intervening territory is infested with pirates, the thing to do is travel by lightly armed open rover instead of flying in a shuttle. Yeah, it's great. Also, the notion of you would need to you'd send a radio signal to Neptune and sit listening for an answer, allowing for an 8-hour round trip signal time from that point of view. And if you need the personal favourite, this one for myself, Jeffrey, if you need to get inside a rocket that's minutes from liftoff and you're coming up from beneath, you can expect to find an airlock hatch right next to the engines. And anyway, what's a little smoke and fire to a tough astronauts? So are these some of the things that
I'm sure we could have gotten aboard the Saturn V that way.
I don't know why they bother. You know, I mean, Armstrong, I mean, obviously, after that whole sort of sequence and the tragedy, of course, of Apollo 1 from that point of view, why didn't they just actually enter from the rear, enter via the exhaust, you know? Eloise, would you echo those thoughts of Jeffrey's?
I would. Everything was just ridiculous. Like, you had to get through a meteor or sort of shower at one point, and it was like, oh, that's fine, I could just use this door. That'll work.
And the tower in the opening sequence, it looks cool, but what is it? What's it for? What's holding it up? And what about the jump from the station through the battering rings of Neptune at the end, coming out right where you parked your spaceship? Maybe it's suspension of disbelief, Jeffrey. Maybe it's a suspension of disbelief. I don't know. Let's talk about the Chaos Chronicles, because they do actually say that the more effort you put into something, the more chaos you cause, they being the second law of thermodynamics, something I frequently use, Jeffrey, with my own students when they say, goodness, it's a somewhat sort of, you know, packed office you've got here. It's the second law of entropy, I say, in action. You know, more effort you put into something, the more chaos you cause. Talk to us about the reefs of time, not to be confused, of course, with the reefers of time, which would be a drug-induced situation we don't want to go into at this stage. But how did you come up with the idea, and what sort of has made this just awesome? And why hasn't it been optioned? I mean, surely it must have been optioned by now, because, I mean, the cinematic nature of the writing, it's fantastic.
It has not been. It's available. I would love for somebody to do a video production of it. I think it would make a great mini-series.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as to how it came about, you know, as with most of my novels, a couple of ideas just fall together. I was reading an article many years ago in the Planetary Report about chaotic movements of asteroids in the solar system, and I just read James Gleick's book, Chaos. And these things just started twirling around in my head. And I was looking for something that could be a short, quick, snappy novel, a series of them. And that was, 15 years ago, something like that. And one thing leads to another. It's like planetary bodies smacking into each other and accreting into something bigger, and that's how the novel grew in my mind.
And I suppose whether you go via solar time or sidereal time, you know, the time that we go around the sun, or the time the sun and the solar system takes to go around the universe, as Sophocles once said, and a quote that you actually use, part one of Storm Gathering, the long, unmeasured pulse of time moves everything. I love the way you actually juxtapose that. After, sandwich in a little Leonardo da Vinci, O time, swift devourer of all created things, with, of course, our ultimate guide to the universe and everything, Yoda. Always in motion is the future. Genius.
Sorry.
I wasn't channeling really Yoda there, by the way, Eloise. It's just it's what happens. Eloise, any questions you want to put to the Nebula Award nominated? You win soon from that point of view. There. And indeed, member of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America and the Authors Guild and the author-owned publishing collaborative Bookview Cafe, who is, of course, Jeffrey A. Carver.
I have two questions, and they're completely unrelated to each other. So, number one, because I like to be nosy, what part of Boston are you in?
What part of Boston? Well, I live not too far from Harvard Square in the town of Arlington. It's on the northwest side of Boston, so it's a quick ride in.
Oh, nice. I love Boston, so I thought it'd be nice.
When were you last in Boston?
Boston's a wonderful city. I'm not a native of Boston. I grew up in Ohio in a small town, but I've been in the Boston area for many years now.
Yeah, just like Captain Kirk, you know.
I was last in Boston about...
That's right. Well, he was from Iowa. I'm from Ohio.
Exactly. Listen.
I used to have a T-shirt that said, University of Idaho, Iowa City, Ohio. Nobody can keep those three states straight.
This is so true. You know, it's that middle America heartland. I mean, I'm sure your current president actually can understand exactly where everything is, and he won't make that mistake at all. Anyway, what the heck. Eloise, sorry, you were saying you were last in Boston when?
In September. Yeah, I like Boston.
As Eloise, in fact, it's fair to say Eloise would like to work in America.
I would.
She's currently doing postgraduate studies, having done a first degree in film and television studies at the University of Lincoln, England, not Nebraska, just to clarify things
or
on
Boston,
that basis.
Boston, there's a Lincoln in Boston as well.
Exactly. It's easily confused. So often students actually expect to actually head off to Boston, and they get Boston, Lincolnshire, a completely different place, which actually has all sorts of... strange activities going on there. And a lot of Polish-speaking people, it has to be said. Anyway, so, Eloise, any other sort of... What's your second question? Because we've identified where, approximately, not in a scary stalker sense, obviously, where Jeffrey actually is based in Boston. What's your next one?
It was all gone.
There. Okay.
Let's
talk our way through. Because I'm interested by your Master of Marine Affairs degree that you got in the 70s. Because I'm thinking, has that in some way kind of influenced your writing? Or is it a case of, no, if I was doing that, I'd talk about Sequest DSV and the hard science behind Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea?
Well, that Master of Marine Affairs degree was an interesting program. It served no use my life all.
You were just breaking up there slightly.
I'd become an nabbed when I was and I was looking for kind of put my water exploration.
It's the time travel.
There seems to be a slight error, a slight sort of error with the connections. Jeffrey, you're just breaking up slightly. Can you actually still hear us? I suspect he can't even hear us at this particular stage. We're going to have to try and get Jeffrey back, because clearly we can't just leave people hanging on the access of forever on that basis. So we will actually endeavour to get Jeffrey back. He's in the void, and hopefully he will now recognise that he needs to actually put the phone down. Oh, yeah, are you still there, Jeffrey? No.
Wait, I'm sorry. You cut out for about 20 seconds there.
So and so did you, and we were just about to call you back, but I think we might have sorted it out now. So we were just talking about marine biology and so on.
Oh yeah, I was interested in underwater, and in fact, the third book of the Gas Pit Underwater on an Ocean World.
This is true. You're absolutely true, and indeed, Eloise, you're quite right. It does sound, actually, Jeffrey, as though you're underwater at present, which is a little bit irritating. I tell you what, put the phone down. We will get back in touch with you. We've also got the siren news to actually come through as well, so we've got a few other details to work through that. Jeffrey, we'll be back with you in a few seconds from now after this. Always find if you want to actually rescue somebody from the depths of an underwater planet and so on, play Trio and Da Da Da. Oh well. Jeffrey, I think you're back with us now, and the line has improved substantially, all being well.
That's right. I have you on hold on the other line. I've got you both ways.
We're coming to you in stereo. Excellent. We've got a few moments before we actually have to have the siren news here. So let's not run the risk of running about underwater stuff, because it did sound as though you were talking to us from under the ocean at that particular stage. It's very strange, but nonetheless.
All right. I like realism, but not always.
It's art imitating life, imitating art, and so on. Are you more of a fan of realistic science? Are you more a fan of the Arthur C. Clarkes of the world, the Isaac Asimovs, and I suppose in this century, the likes of Steve Baxter, the likes of Kim Stanley Robinson, and so on? Is that the sort of motion where you think if we're looking for science fiction, that's where you go to, as opposed to, obviously, Arthur C. Clarke's law, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from that of science, which is why I often ask my students, does that mean Harry Potter science fiction? Indistinguishable from magic, of course, is the line there. Sorry, it's just corrected straight away. Jeffrey, who are your favourite authors and inspirations? Are you still with us, Jeffrey?
He's put us on hold twice.
He's put us on hold twice. You know, sometimes you almost can get a complex about this, you know, clearly on that system. I don't think even Trio can actually help us out at this particular stage. But we will actually try and get back to Jeffrey immediately after the news, which will be coming up in a few moments from now. And to take us around to the news, a little touch of D.C. Lee. Not Washington, D.C., not even Boston, but see the day.
You see, do you see? No.
We are going to attempt, he says in his best robotic voice, to actually connect with Jeffrey Carver again, under the ocean or in some way, shape, or form, after the news from the Sky... Well, no, it's not from the Sky News Centre. Honestly, read the script, Alex Lefchik. Read the script. It's hopefully third time is the charm, and Jeffrey Carver in Boston. Hopefully all is well now. And let's... I was just actually looking at our latest blog entries in terms of Time Slips R Us. We not only did time travel calculations in a bizarre sense, we also had calculations of just getting the phone line sorted out. Never mind.
Yeah, I hear you as clearly as if you were on the moon.
Whoa. Exactly. Which I suppose is quite good to do that. Oh, other things. Let's talk about the Chaos Cop Chronicles, and certainly we have had some chaos here, because I did like the dedication. Would you like to just share why it's been dedicated to Chuck, who waited so long and then was snatched away too soon?
Oh, Chuck was my older brother, 2 years older,
right?
And he passed away in June, about halfway through his reading of the first of the new books. So it was, he'd been waiting years for me to finish this book. It was an 11-year project to finish these books, and he was tremendously supportive. So it's very sad to lose him. He was a world-renowned psychology professor, and he left a lot of people behind missing him.
Well, I'm sure he'll be looking down now and saying, thank the Lord, they finally got it together. And on the positive side, at least it didn't take as long as Harper Lee did to do a sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird. So, you know, good news on that front.
There you go. There you go.
Now, again, the website to go to, we'd say starrigger.net, is fantastic to find out more about various other bits and pieces. Got to ask the question about Battlestar Galactica, of course. Were you a fan of the new series? Was it something which you thought, or was it a case of secretly you always wanted to have Lorne Greene back in the role of Commander Adama?
Funny issue, that. The original series, I watched once and turned off and never watched any more of it.
Ah. That's one of the reasons it was cancelled, no doubt, you see. switched it off, probably when Patrick McNee was doing an episode of the whole thing.
When the new one came out, I actually saw it almost by accident, because it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, which I wasn't supposed to get with my cable package, and some cable repairman made a mistake and turned it on for me. So I happened to catch it, and then I thought, hey, that was a lot better than I expected. Mm-hmm. And then time went by, and a call came out of the blue from my editor at Tor saying, hey, would you like to write a novelization of Battlestar Galactica, and have you seen it? And I said, I did see it. It was much better than I expected. Mm-hmm. And so then I became a fan of the series through the course of writing the book and after writing the book. And I thought it was great stuff they did. And I was very happy to be a very small part of it. It was a lot of fun.
And indeed, the first series which really kind of managed to reflect on the post-9/11 world and done as the in the classic way of science fiction as metaphor, science fiction as allegory, ways in which you can really address things which maybe would have been a little bit too close to the bone if we hadn't been
right.
You know, using the notion of Cylons and other aspects as well. Eloise, did you manage to come up with that final question as yet?
Yeah, I did, but you'd already asked it by the time I remembered.
That we already see. That's time, you see. That's the that's the nebulous nature of the whole sort of sequence. Where can people actually get hold of the Infinity Sea, the Reefs of Time, Part 1, Part 2? Where can people actually access these wonderful things? Is it best to go, Jeffrey, to StarRigger.net?
Well, StarRigger.net will have links to all of the stores that carry them. In e-book, they're available pretty much wherever fine e-books are found. In print, they're available online or probably special order through your bookstore. They're available through a major distributor, Ingram. So they're easy to find, but with the online world and the demise of our wonderful network of small bookstores, that's not so easy an option now. But they're easy to find online.
Well, Jeffrey, I have to say I fully endorse it. I'm looking forward to working my way through the pentology, basically, in terms of the five texts that we've actually got so far. I'm starting off with the first three, obviously, because I wanted to start at the beginning, find out the way things actually go. We haven't even talked about space fugue. You know, this notion that I think we were suffering from in this particular telephone interview, basically, where suddenly the connections go. It was almost as though we were actualizing that space fugue and we were just going to crash into all sorts of things, really.
Silence fugue.
Silence fugue.
Because John Bandicoot was equipped with neural links so that he, as part of his work, interfaced with large data nets directly through his brain to net connection. And the connections got fried, and it made him vulnerable to this psychological problem called silence fugue, where he would just periodically tip over into a mild psychotic state. And the alien Quarks, who you mentioned earlier, in his head is able to help stabilize him as they get to know each other and work together.
And let's face it, when you start hearing voices in your head after a silence fugue, it's the way forward. You know, the line is there for all manner of exciting things. Jeffrey, it has been awesome connecting with your good self. I feel as though Boston has reestablished links with Lincoln, England, in a positive way. You know, after a little panic there, you know, genuinely, we won't go under the water. I won't even mention Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Mind you, those attack of those giant vegetables, quite interesting. Yeah, you really,
that's a show I watched when I was a kid. Yeah, I loved Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
If we're looking at real hard science, surely you can't go far wrong when you talk about Irwin Allen's quadrilogy of Lost in Space, The Time
Exactly.
Tunnel. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and of course, the wonderful Land of the Giants. But that's for another soul, because the next question is, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program tonight, or indeed this afternoon in Boston, Jeffrey Carver?
Yes.
And the next critical question is... three times, amazing. I mean, that sorts out time zones and everything. It's great. So will you be kind enough to return? Will you come back? Can we speak with you again in the very near future?
I would love to. Anytime.
So a round of applause, please, for Jeffrey A. Carver.
Yay! Thank you very much. You've been a wonderful audience.
buying me. And if you wanted to have a number one song all over heaven, you would actually employ a ZJ to actually work through the whole thing. Isn't that right, ZJ Zoe Jameson? Welcome back to Midweek Drive. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, well, I mean, after the first hour of the programme, which I think it's fair to say left us, from an audio point of view, somewhat shell-shocked in terms of the experience that we've had. I mean, I'm not talking about 5:45 news, that leaves us shell-shocked every week, but in terms of the actual sort of package that's involved when you're trying to get through to Boston and you think the line's perfectly okay, and then you mention underwater and suddenly it all goes crazy. Literally crazy. You know, three times we had to call Jeffrey A. Carver back. Or just Jeffrey Carver.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm using the full name because obviously that's the liner. And in case you're wondering, the connection with Battlestar Galactica, he actually wrote the novelisation of the original pilot for Battlestar Galactica. It wasn't just a random name there. We will be mentioning the words Ukrainian cowboy again during this hour, and I've just done that one more time. And it'll slot into one of the key things. But Zoe, talk to us. Where are you? What are you doing? What are you getting up to these days?
Well, I'm currently at the Olympic hockey pitch, and we are playing hockey, so I am unfortunately injured, so on the sidelines today. But, yeah.
Who did it, Zoe? Who actually sort of who bullied off too strongly to the extent that they've actually left you injured on the sidelines? Who did this, Zoe?
No one, unfortunately.
Did you do it yourself? Was it an accidental sort of... Were you going for that ultimate shot, that killer shot? Because I know how dangerous hockey can actually be. And you're taking that line at the Olympic pitch as well. This is serious stuff. Remember, there are horses relying on your health in years to come.
not recent, so it's okay. We're getting there.
Okay. So who's winning?
I've had a flock of the horses today. I'm now treating small furry animals, which has been quite an experience.
Oh, you see, there's just nothing, whether it's giant onions or small furry animals, you know, Zoe, she's like, she's got all the power.
What type of furry animals?
This is true. What type of furry animals, Zoe?
Oh, well, we had a rabbit and a guinea pig, and we actually had an axolotl today as well.
An axolotl.
That's cute.
Yeah.
More difficult to pronounce than it actually is to look after, perhaps, but at the same time, still very important. And we don't choose animals on the basis of how difficult to pronounce they might well be, otherwise you could be in all sorts of challenges from that point of view. It's not their fault, after all. They don't pick the names, or do they?
Wow. I don't think so.
On some level, do the animals actually choose their owners? Do they actually select for that? I mean, I know that... Yeah. This is certainly the line.
This axolotl was called Axel, so maybe he did pick his name.
Oh, so a former lead singer for Guns N' Roses, then, obviously. I always said he looked a bit like an axolotl, but still, never mind. So it goes. And can you share with us what challenges you were faced with these particular rabbits, axolotls, and assorted small furry beasts?
The axolotl had a mass removed from his side, which was very interesting, because to perform anaesthesia on an amphibian is quite a challenge.
Yeah. Underwater again, you see, clearly. those amphibians, we mustn't, because at the end of the day, evolutionarily speaking, we came from amphibians. You know, it was probably a very brave axolotl who took those first steps and said, "What the heck?" and led to us, you know, uniquely sort of getting here, really. But did it go under? I mean, did it raise its limbs in any way which suggested it was conscious, or a case of he's gone completely?
Yeah, it all went very smoothly.
Right.
So the axolotl recovered and ready to go home now.
So good. And the hamster? Is it not such good news for the hamster? Did we have a hamster?
Guinea
pigs and hamsters, to me, they're like one and the same. You know, they're desert-based creatures, you know. So the guinea pig, yes.
Guinea pig is also... I think the guinea pig's gone home already. He's recovered as well. And the little rabbit's gone home too. I think all in a good day's work.
There's, I mean, that's just feel good. I mean, I know next week we're going to have the return of Michelle Monroe after a huge gap while she'd been on cruise ships all over the globe, etc., talking about her dad, the late great Matt Monroe. But, you know, fundamentally, I feel that, Zoe, you bring to us that whole notion of furry animals and axolotls, or other amphibians, they are available, actually just being better creatures in the world. And I personally, I think, you know, I'm not going to do Robin's job for him, but I have a feeling that that might just have actually knocked Jeffrey Carver out of the race, even though Jeffrey's persistent in being back with us three consecutive times might sort of who knows, you know. I mean, yeah. Zoe, you have of course won the Robin Pearce Most Valuable Contributor Award several times from this point of view, so it's a great loss. We have to ask the question, who's winning in the hockey?
Oh, RBC, actually. My university team are winning, so that's good.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Like that. Have you ever played the University of Lincoln at all?
We don't travel that far north, I don't think.
Yeah, and let's face it, you can't get much further north than Lincoln, can you, Eloise? this is like way north. I mean, this is almost like Arctic in many ways. You know, it's very, very sort of challenging. It's one of the reasons we have this outpost here where you sort of step outside and don't know what's happening. Mind you, that could just be the story of one's life. Eloise, anything you'd like to ask Zoe about in terms of her, you know, she's in her final year, you know, of her veterinary course, you know, so anything could actually happen over the next few months. All good, of course.
Good luck.
Thanks very much. I think I might need it.
If in doubt, employ a hockey stick. I think that's the message we're coming through this. I really wasn't aware that it's for anaesthetic, you know? It's a short, sharp way. Obviously, I'm presuming she's a vet. She'll know how to apply, you know, a brief, you know, it's not like clubbing seals. It would just be a case of use the hockey stick to, you know, mild unconsciousness. You know, if you don't have anaesthetic available. I think that's just a useful line, Zoe. I mean, I'm just sort of, you know, I'm just suggesting.
Maybe leave that to you.
I wonder if she's pulling the same face that I am.
Well, you know, I'm not a vet. I've never claimed to be, but I'm just.
I definitely don't endorse that.
No, actually, to be fair, probably I'll dial back a bit. You know, so don't use the hockey sticks. Baseball club, on the other hand.
Oh my God.
Is that right? You see, this is what happens, Zoe, when you go and see the Joker. Suddenly, you sort of these things manifest in strange and bizarre, surreal ways. You know, you think, I would never have said that. And now, you know, it's the media effects theory all the way down the line. Zoe, at this moment in time, because we still haven't sorted out timetable, so when you're going to be joining us in the studio, it'll happen, and hopefully this side of Christmas, and we're coming down to London.
Oh, yeah, we will get there.
We will. Or you'll get here, one of the two things, either of those
Are
routes. With or without hockey sticks. No, that's the best. With or without hockey sticks, or indeed baseball bats. Last two questions for Zoe, please. Eloise.
Zoe, apart from the weirdness that is Alex, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have indeed, yes.
Will you be joining us again sometime soon?
Yes.
Yep.
And the only way we can actually follow that quite simply is ask the question, can you play bass?
Cut, tell me something. You can play bass. You can play drum. Go crazy.
You know what it is? I'm just too tough.
One of these days I might actually do a lecture with Street Tough as the underlying theme from that point of view and actually launch the whole thing with Wheel, Wheel Man, I'm just Street Tough. Or is it a case of, oh, yes, so 20th century. And never mind, Street Tough, the Ska Radio mix, to be precise, with Rebel MC and Double Trouble. Could almost be describing Tessa Snot and Leedy Jane, basically. Rebel MC and Double Trouble, as actually about to be heard on Siren Radio. 7 o'clock, Monday night, Sound and Country Vision, Volume 33, Eloise. Volume nice. 33. There's a random incursion by Eva MacDonald as well, doing random incursion stuff. It's amazing. Tessa, welcome to the programme. We've been teasing throughout the show to the words cowboy Ukrainian, Ukrainian cowboy. Caused great hilarity with Eloise. Yeah, exactly. It's been there. Even when we went under the ocean, those Ukrainian cowboys kept us somehow sort of up and above the whole thing. And now it can be revealed how it really connects, not with William Coles, yeah, not with Arthur Weingarten, not with Jeffrey A. Carver, not with the Siren News team, not with Zoe Jameson. Although I still think maybe a Ukrainian cowboy could also be used as anaesthetic when you're actually dealing with those axolotls. Was that an axolotl?
It was an axolotl, yes.
Okay. So sometimes short-term memory is the first thing you go. what would you like to talk to us about in terms of this thing we're about to actually hear now, which features cowboy and re-Ukrainian?
Yeah, so this track is by Josie Cotton. I'm not sure, Alex, whether you've heard of her before. She had some hits in the 80s.
What, the 1880s?
Soundtrack. I don't know. She's had a successful career. I don't know. I think one of her...
When you talk about cotton, there's only one thing that springs to my mind, and that's Cotton Eye Joe from the 90s. You know? Exactly. Rednecks. And I don't think Josie's a redneck.
She's not. She's an American singer and actress from Dallas, Texas. But funnily enough, she's not purely a country music artist at all. She actually likes to experiment with her music, and she's done electronica, western, swamp, rockabilly, rock, the whole lot. In fact, she reminds me a lot of Joan Jett, actually. Not with this particular track we're about to play, but yeah, even if you look her up, she's dark black hair and everything.
Is that Joan Jett with or without the black hearts? Because that can be critical in terms of the width.
Oh, I don't know, maybe with and without, really.
With and without, right?
Yeah, with and without. Yeah. I'll go with and without.
Yeah.
But maybe without, because she is solo on her own.
Okay.
So we'll go with that.
Well, as you may have gathered, Tessa, due to unforeseen circumstances, illness, event management, and Lord knows what happened to Fergus, but, you know, these days it moves on. It's only Eloise and myself in the studio, which means it's really only Eloise you've got to impress on this particular basis.
Really?
Could be a tough challenge, though.
This is very different. Yeah. I'll go with spaghetti western.
Wow.
For me, it's like a theme track to a film, so we'll see what you think. Mm. I think it's very good, actually. It's catchy.
Okay. Go on, then. Introduce it, please.
Here it is, then. Ukrainian cowboy, Josie Cotton.
Yeah. Oh, those Cossacks. And their immortal ways of carrying on. There's a hole in my soul as big as Russia. Oh, maybe Prussia. I'll be gone before I'm dead as the moon is turning red. I'm already into the zone, basically. I mean, what can I say? I mean, Tessa, you've outdone yourself this week. This is, you know, wow. This is, I mean.
Very different, isn't it?
You had guns, you had shooting, you had the whole, I mean, I mean, this is what serious music is all about. Take that, Tchaikovsky.
I know.
Oh, fantastic.
And now. You like that?
And now we turn to Eloise for the refined commentary on the joys of Ukrainian cowboy.
I thought it was different. It's not something I would listen to as I listen to older music, but as...
I didn't get much older than Ukrainian cowboy.
But, yeah, I see what you mean. It's different. It's something... quite original.
I think, you know, if
not
ever
like anything else.
If ever Piercing the Veil actually merits a theme tune, I think, you know, if ever Sci-Fi Weekender merits a theme tune, Ukrainian Cowboy.
I feel like it'd be good on a soundtrack. Yeah.
Western science fiction, clearly it's there. You know, I mean, all it needs is a bit of added Paul McGann and the world's your oyster. Yeah, Ukrainian Cowboy.
This has actually been released along with another single called Cold War Spy, so there is a Russian theme going on here. But it's been released on vinyl.
And on vinyl as well, so they've kept it old school.
And on vinyl as well as all digital
amazing,
platforms. So.
Amazing.
I know.
Yeah, this is the quality that comes through. Tessa, not in the Russian, but I'm going to ask Eloise to, as ever, put the last two questions to you.
Tessa, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Yes, hopefully so, with another tune of the week.
Wow. And Ian Lennox will certainly have something to say about Ukrainian Cowboy. Last time I'll say it on the programme today. But will it be mentioned by other contributors? Who knows? Well, it's dropped to great acclaim and great excitement and huge anticipation, which is why we had to get former editor of SFX magazine back with us now, freelance writer extraordinaire Richard Edwards, to talk to us about what has dropped, haven't we, Richard?
Hello.
Yay. And what's dropped? The trailer. The trailer.
It's only the trailer since the start of episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I just was losing the sort of power of speech there, possibly because I was
investing too much in my inner Ukrainian. But it has actually dropped. And your thoughts, Richard? Talk us through this teaser as we look ahead to the final, the end of everything from 1977 to the present.
Well, I think the emphasis has to be on teaser for this, because I don't think it actually tells us that much about the film. We already knew that Emperor Palpatine was going to be back in some capacity. We kind of get a bit of his voice. We see what might be him. We see Rey and Kylo Ren with lightsabers. There's some lots of dialogue that could be taken in lots of different ways, because it doesn't mean that much without context. Some beautiful visuals, and there's this one amazing sort of iceberg sort of world with sort of TIE fighters flying around it, which looks amazing. There's some kind of horse-like creatures running over the surface of a Star Destroyer. I mean, it's going to look amazing. So what it's going to be about, aside from the fact it's the end of a sort of epic nine-movie saga, don't know.
Eloise, having been disappointed by Ad Astra, and we found out the reasons why with our science fiction writer and author Jeffrey Carfer earlier, no real respect for science, Richard. No real respect for science in Ad Astra. What are your anticipations about what you're looking at now, the trailer, inglorious silent siren sound for the saga coming to an end?
I would actually like to go and see it, but I've only actually ever seen 3 Star Wars films, so I feel like I have to watch the others.
And which 3 were those?
The first 3 in order.
Episode 4, I've seen The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, like the first.
So, right, Richard, Eloise has experienced the joys of Jar Jar Binks.
Yes,
as I like
those
to
are the 3 that I watched.
I'm actually quite jealous of you, because the best is yet to come. You know, episodes 4, 5, and 6, where is that? So I would love to have not seen those and get to watch them again for the first time. Yeah. So
many people would love to have never seen Jar Jar Binks, but I'm still standing at how rude, you know. And as for Brian Blessed, as indeed he performed for us at the last Sci-Fi Weekend, with added industrial language, which sadly,
yes,
Richard, we can't
much.
Repeat here, for obvious reasons. He is Brian Blessed, after all, even with the children's audience. Who knows what will happen in the next thing? Andrew Lee Potts is the chap I'm scheduled to interview as the prime interviewer for Sci-Fi Weekend, and Sophie Aldred, to fine folk who are actually there, which is great. I'm not sure whether Sylvester McCoy will be allowed out of France, because let's face it, he's living in France, he's a Scotsman. With respect to Brexit negotiations, it could be a disaster. Exactly. Very strange. Looking ahead to that, Richard, how is life now? Because, I mean, actually, you're still part of the future publishing family, because I still see your byline in Total Film, I see it in SFX every so often, and it's good from that point of view. Well, that has to be said, and I haven't broken the news to the latest incarnation and the occupant of the editor. I don't know, it's lost that kind of Richard Edwards magic somehow. I just, you know, just by the by, we'll have to sort of give him a reply. What are you doing, Richard? What have you been getting up to since last we spoke?
Still a lot of SFX, Total Film, Games Radar, sort of writing about films and TV. Fewer of the jobs, less sort of exciting.
Raising a family, being a father, you know, those kind of things. You know, all the critical aspects of life.
It's good, you know, still, watching lots of films and TV and all that sort of thing. So, you know, it's fairly similar to what before, but just not running a great big magazine.
So let's take it to the next stage. Have you seen The Joker?
I have, yes.
I've already.
You want me to tell me what you think about
well,
it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's growing on me, but then again, that might be because it's infecting my inner pathways and gradually getting to the stage of saying, where do I go with respect to this, really? It's a dark take on the whole DC Comics universe, which I thought we kind of were getting away from, but at the same time, it still opens up a whole range of other factors, and it certainly doesn't portray Thomas Wayne in a good light, you know, which is disappointing, you know. What are your thoughts, Richard?
I'm still not entirely sure. I'm still sort of computing. I think it was a really well-made film. It looked amazing. Sort of, you could almost smell this sort of dirty Gotham. You know, it was so evocative. And I think as well, Joaquin Phoenix's performance is amazing. You know, it's one of these full-on transformation performances. I still feel a little uneasy about it. It's doing really sort of Scorsese-ish Taxi Driver thing about this guy who's sort of, I guess, descent into evil, and it's very gritty. But I still not sure how I feel about that being done with a character like the Joker, who's this kind of very cartoony, you know, although he's been portrayed in so many different ways, there's always been this sort of element of
pathological killer about him, really. I mean, you know, the line, never rob another man's rhubarb, as uttered by Jack Nicholson, surely it's iconic, you know? I mean,
But there's still an element of, you know, there's an element of comic book sort of over-the-topness to him, and here, by making him so real, and also, you know, you're still making an art house movie, but with this sort of icon from DC Comics, who will drag people into the cinema, and you know, I was a little uneasy with the idea of people cosplaying as this Joker. Let's put it like that.
Yeah. I mean, Harley Quinn, different case. You know, she was a psychologist, but then was turned by the Joker and did all sorts of strange and wacky things, and will be a key part of, obviously, the upcoming movie, which features the redemption of Harley Quinn and the whole range of Birds of Prey.
Let's just call it Birds of Prey.
Yeah, let's call it Birds of Prey, exactly.
Isn't it the Emancipation
of one Harley Quinn, exactly. Sometimes you think, how are they going to fit that on the marquee sites? It's going to be very curious.
Nightmare for all magazines, we've got to fit the title of it.
Exactly. I mean, even down the spine, you know, even if you put it down the spine, you'd still find, from a magazine point of view, you think, what's going to happen on that basis? Eloise, any sort of comeback on that one? Because you've seen the Joker.
I just really liked it. I like DC, but I prefer Marvel, so normally I don't go and see DC films unless they really intrigue me, but I really quite like the Joker, and I thought Phoenix was absolutely astounding. So.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, just a little smidgen, an insight into why Richard Edwards will not be taking his daughter to see the Joker. She's only four. Or is it two or three? I don't know. How old is she these days?
She's seven. But
seven,
she's
yeah. They grow up so quickly, you know. I mean, you know, Richard, he might have said, well, that she's been in an accelerator. She's now turned 27. I don't know, these days. It's like Alpha Child in Space 1999. Cultural reference there. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
It's been brilliant, thank you.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future? Will you come back?
Oh, I do hope so.
Yay!
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? One by one, we're gonna stand up with pride, one that can't be denied. Stand up, stand up. From the highest mountain valley low, we'll join together with hearts of gold. Now the children of the world can see, this is a better place for us to be. Place in which we were born, so neglected and torn apart. Every woman, every man, join the caravan of love.
Stand up,
stand up,
stand up.
Everybody take a stand, join the caravan of love.
Stand up,
stand up,
stand up.
I'm your brother. I'm your brother, don't you know? She's my sister. She's my sister, don't you know? We'll be living in a world of peace. Won't you let your love flow from
your heart? Every woman, every man, join the caravan of love. Stand up,
stand up,
stand up. Everybody take a stand, join the caravan of love.
stand up,
stand up, stand up. I'm your brother.
Yeah, you better get ready, because someday, somehow, I'm sure that the Chilpack Hollywood Caravan of Love, which will be yee-hawing in some kind of, I was almost tempted to say, Ukrainian cowboy way. No, no, exactly. Without the guns, obviously. Will make its way, I'm sure, back to Europe again. Or what remains of Europe after, you know, whatever happens in whatever state of play we happen to be. Fiddleianus, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm good. You just gave me an idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're about.
I'm thinking we're moving our podcast, Dean and I, to a new platform very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm thinking we might want to rebrand as Hollywood Caravan.
Hey.
That's a really good name. It's old Hollywood.
Exactly.
It also implies that we've moved. We also hit the road so often. Mm-hmm. But I've been hinting at this for a couple weeks, and our new home, if this all works out, will be very science fiction oriented. Not that our show will be more science fiction oriented than before. Maybe there will be certain shifts in our show. But I think, Alex Lefchuk, you would need to be our first guest on the new show. So.
Oh, Phil, you know, I'm blushing all over in a kind of strange midweek driveway. Sure enough, I am. It's very kind, Phil, and I look forward to...
Maybe not.
You see, too hard, trying too hard. How often do I say to people when they're going in for the audience, when they're going in for connections, you've got the deal, you don't have to get to the stage of just overselling the whole thing. Ease back. Sometimes, as Patrick McGoohan might have said when he's ignoring Annette Andre, less is more.
I taught that whole chapter, that whole section in Annette Andre's book in my acting class and explained what was going on there and the importance of being a professional, a dignified professional, off camera, so that when you are doing great work on camera, it won't be misconstrued. By the way, speaking of science fiction, I would imagine that a world that enjoyed your very bizarre Gone with the Wind accent would have to be a science fiction world.
Tomorrow is another day. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Oh, my goodness. I think I speak for all of us when I say creepy.
I'm traumatized.
Yeah, as you approach Halloween, what better than channeling my inner Scarlett O'Hara?
Oh my goodness. That actually would be a rad Halloween.
Phil,
get
you
up
can't
for you.
See him. He's doing actions as well.
I always do actions. How can the voice develop if you don't do actions as well? For God's sakes. You know,
there was for about a week and a half a camera in studio where such a thing was visible. What happened with that, Alex?
Don't ask me. It was all to do with managing directorial decisions. You'll have to take it up with other sort of sources. Sometimes it's there, but it's never been there again. I think the feeling was no. It's the scenery is so much better without the camera. You know, that's that whole thing. You can imagine the palatial surroundings that we actually have without necessarily getting fretted.
But I feel like if a backstop, if Brexit is passed with a backstop, then the camera will go back into the studio.
Well, clearly.
I don't know why, but I feel like that's connected somehow.
It could be a possibility. I shall say no more. Eloise, as the sole midweek driver in the studio, we send our best wishes, obviously, to Kira and to Beverly and to...
Eva.
Eva, who's going to be one of the midweek drivers, who's going to go all the way with yourself, Eloise, and myself in a week's time from now to Great Yarmouth.
I'm calling shotgun.
Yep, for the Sci-Fi Weekender 2019, in which grand things will ensue, including meeting up with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Robin Pierce, providing an audio podcast from the whole package, doing a live version of the Stone tapes, doing various interviews and so on. In fact, the only thing that Sci-Fi Weekender is sadly missing out on is no Phil Leonis. Oh, no. Never mind.
Well, I feel like you could have me be a part of it by sending me information relating to audio stings and introductions that you
this
need.
Is nice. Yes, is it? I was going to sort of follow up by, you won't get it, you know, and other lines, who are you? And you would say, the new number two.
I'm the new co-presenter.
I know, exactly. You can tell the rehearsals work.
I would love to do a sting, like promos. Let's go outside Midweek Drive. Can't I do also some promos for the Stone tape?
Of course. I mean, this is exactly... If Phil Herdwood can do it, then certainly his namesake Phil Leonis.
Well, okay, all right. Let me rephrase. I know I can do it.
Yes.
Would you actually use
yes.
them?
Yes, of course. Look, we use Chase Mastersons, you know, show in, show out. We wheel out Chase like some crazed Lita Darbo girl that she is in many ways, you know, and it's still that. So obviously, when it comes to Phil Leonis, who's worked with Marina Sirtis, for goodness sakes, obviously there'll be a connection on that basis, you know?
I am in my own way a Dabo girl,
yeah,
so...
Exactly.
I don't know. And somehow, that manages to be only the second most creepy thing said or performed during my appearance today on the Midweek Drive, because we're going to have to go long and hard before we approach Alex Lefchuk as Scarlett O'Hara.
Da 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 da. Sorry, I was doing my sort of Muppetoon sort of move from side to side. That's very wonderful. Now only another 20 minutes, and we still got to find out
for all those people at home. For all those people at home who are wondering, you know, I wonder what Gone with the Wind would have been like with Jim Broadbent in it. This is the closest thing we'll come to finding out.
And we still have to find out who Robin Pierce's most valuable contributor is going to be. It's all very important.
I feel you are going to sway him against me at this point.
Do you think so?
As I said, I don't know if I'd ever heard you do a Southern accent at all, and you went all the way to antebellum Scarlett O'Hara.
I should do. It's you know, you feel the need, you feel the urge, you have to get in touch with the whole thing. It's after all what the cotton picking things would burn for in the first.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't go foghorn leghorn.
No.
Most of us start our immersion into the Southern idioms when it comes to accents with foghorn leghorn, and no, you went all the way there. You went all the way Vivian Leigh.
In the classic words of the Ukrainian cowboy, I'll be gone before I'm dead, as the moon is turning red. Just leave you with that one.
Is this the Halloween episode? Because it is the scariest.
We can go one further next week. We've got a performance poet in the studio. So what more can you say? Live performance poetry and Phil Hammond-Williams. So we'll have two Phils being able to actually communicate in stereophonic signs and such like. And it is the time now where, Eloise, you need to actually throw the questions at Phil, because otherwise I'll be saying there's a hole in my soul as big as Russia or maybe Prussia. I think it's very good for Donald Trump, actually. There's a hole in my soul as big as Russia, or maybe Prussia. To me, it's the phrase of the year. Would you like to take away with those last two questions, please, Eloise?
Yes. Phil, have you had a reasonably
intrenic? Have you had a reasonably intrenic telephonic link?
Oh, my goodness. It was deeply intrenic. That's fantastic. That's getting written down right now.
I think that's the way forward.
Raises
that problem. She can't just lift cars physically by being annoyed at them and shifting them across the roundabout. She can actually bring new meaning to the English language via, of course, her Latin studies, which is obviously intriguing.
I feel that my appearance was intrinsic. It was also intrinsic to what went on, and it was endlessly interesting.
I'm glad to know. And will you be joining us again soon?
No.
Oh, fair enough.
That's the way forward. Time. It could be 168 hours from now. It could be 169 hours from now. We just don't know.
Well, yes, days. I will be appearing next week, but 1 hour later.
Yeah.
Same time for you, but 1 hour later for me.
Which means
I mean, we're right back into the science fiction realm. I don't know. It's the multiverse of broadcast. You'd like to get rid of me right now. Just play me off. It's like the Oscars. Play me off. Play music.
We have the Wee Papa Girl rappers just for you, Phil, and Fuzz Aldrin and Lily, because it's the tune I know secretly you've always wanted to be played off to.
Yes, and I just have 500 people I'd like to thank while you play me off.
Of course they rule the dance floor. They're the Wee Papa Girl rappers. Sandra and Samantha Lawrence. Ah, those were the days. How often I actually hummed along to that tune whilst waiting for a bus, the number 37 to be precise, to take me from the Dulwich Radio Studios back to Clapham Junction and then onwards to Strawberry Hill. But enough of such stuff. I hope, Eloise, that we've given Robin a bit of a challenge this week in terms of where does he actually go with his critique of the programme. But only Robin can answer that.
Well, first of all, this is Robin Pearce from Wales, speaking to you via Intrenic Link.
Oh my god. I tried.
Super Mariation.
I don't know what you were aiming for there, Eloise, but I like the intranic link. It's better than anything Captain Kirk ever had.
Thank you.
Reverse the polarity of the intranic links. It just works.
Well, absolutely. Or the intranic flow.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Now we are cooking on gas. Anyway, let's take a look at what you've done over the past couple of hours.
What have we done over the past couple of hours?
Well, I set back radio about 15 years. But,
Time travelling, eh? Good.
You know what? You've given me a wealth of stuff to choose from this time. A wealth of stuff. So I guess I'd better start moving on it. William Cole.
Is that We Move? Sorry, I couldn't resist
we
it.
Move.
Teeny tiny moves. We Move.
Are you going to start doing that weird sashaying thing to that last song I heard?
I'm so tempted. You don't know what I'm doing below the waist.
I think we should just film you from the waist up like they did with Elvis Presley.
Yeah, fair point. Carry on, Robin. It's your show. At least this part of it is, shall we say.
William Coles, wasting time on the web. Oh, I don't know if you can do that these days and still be relevant in any way, shape or form. I did kind of a digital detox when I went on holiday a couple of weeks ago. And I have to admit, I did feel better because of it. But I find myself as much of a media kind of idiot these days as I ever have been, and I keep going on Facebook and putting up inane photos.
He's totally connected.
Especially on Wednesday.
Totally connected. And yet, actually, it's fair to say you weren't that impressed this time around, Eloise, with Robin's photo. You thought it was a bit...
It's quite artsy this time.
Artsy.
I thought it was arty, yeah. I balanced my phone up on a shelf and put it on a timer.
I'm impressed.
Was that for nothing? Really?
I'm impressed.
Okay. I will look you in the eyes next week at the Sci-Fi Weekender and ask you, were you impressed?
Robin coming?
Of course he's going. That's the way he is. You see what actually coordinating and negotiating with your employers to ensure that you can actually attend, after all, you'll be able to finally meet once more in person, RP.
Actually, it will be the first time because was away in America when
this
I was
is true.
The studio.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited now.
Yeah. Right, Arthur Weingarten, Honey West, all that brought back memories of Saturday afternoons on Bravo. That's when I first saw Honey West and Francis, and their album must have been, let's see, in the early 90s. Good grief. Oh, I wish they'd remake that. Anyway, I wonder what Arthur will make of the new Addams Family. You need to ask him that next time. He hasn't seen it yet, has he?
No.
I thought that Jeffrey Carver was going to be the MVC because we don't have enough discourse on Battlestar Galactica these days, old or new, or even that one good episode of Galactica 1980 they did, which was the last one. Zoe Jameson, excellent as always. You brought the poor lady to hysterics.
It's the axolotls that do it for me, personally.
I like hearing from Richard Edwards. I would like to meet up with him someday. He'd probably run screaming from me.
Maybe as a freelancer, he could be employed on your grand spanking new magazine, which we may or may not be hearing about at Sci-Fi Weekender.
Oh, we will be hearing about that.
Well, there we are.
You just gave me an idea.
Mm.
Issue number 2. Mm. All right.
Exactly.
Phil Linus. You will not sway me from giving Phil the MVC award this week because somebody else has. For the first time, and I do apologise for this, because I have never done this before, that don't like country music, Tessa gets it.
Wow. The Ukrainian cowboy. The Ukrainian cowboy has tipped the balance for Tessa Snart.
There is a certain insane poetry in There's a Hole in My Soul as Big as Russia, or maybe Prussia, before the war.
Take that, Sam Stone, in your next series of successful novels.
Yeah, she can't write like that, can she?
Well,
no.
Go.
It reminded me, I don't know what the song was called, but in the 20s, there was one of these weird little songs called, and I think it was Ray Bradbury who once mentioned it, and in an interview, and it had the lyric that I've never forgotten, which is just nonsensical, and it was, "Ain't no sin to take off your skin and jump around in your bones."
Of course.
So,
because it ain't, because we moved on with that. It's what the Wee Papa Girl rappers were channeling.
We is moved on, ain't we?
Yeah, sometimes Darwin, maybe he was more devolution as opposed to evolution, but what the hey, I won't get into Devo here. They say we lost
so
our
if we've got a minute to spare, yes? What did you make of the Star Wars trailer? You've been asking other people, what did you make of it?
I don't know. I think it's an interesting attempt to find Disney in particular to obviously try and get these franchise back on track. They've got a lot riding on this.
Jedi.
Yeah, they've got a lot riding on this, and they've got a they've obviously got to wrap up a whole range of elements within that field. And clearly, you cannot diss the fans to the extent and go, in the words of obviously the Batman director, completely woke on the whole thing. Otherwise, you'll kill comedy.
That brings me to another thing that bothers me these days. What does completely woke mean? Why do people throw shade at one another? Have you ever picked up a shadow? I can't do it.
Anyways, you're pretty much down with the vocab and lingua franca, etc. Would you like to define woke for us?
I'm mentally older than most people, so no, I cannot.
No, she cannot.
Eloise, I may give you very close runner-up of MVC just for the haughty tone that you just adopted there. No, I cannot.
So let's take the Merriam-Webster definition of woke in terms of the new sense of woke, which is increasingly used as a byword for social awareness. It can be hard to trace slang back to its origins, but it seems to have actually arisen from the Black Lives Matter word. Sorry, unfortunate sort of slip there. Stay woke became a watchword in many parts of the black community for those who were self-aware, questioning the dominant paradigm and striving for something better.
Okay.
And it became obviously a wider part of the discussion in 2014, hence the tragic shooting of Michael Brown from that point of view. So that's the word. Woke feels that it's coming through in terms of the notion of, like many words originally from black culture, it's been taken into the mainstream and it's gaining broader uses. It's now seeing use as an adjective to refer to places where woke people commune. Woke Twitter has recently taken off as the shorthand for describing social media activists.
I woke up this morning, was that?
No. That again, the broader uses of woke still very much in flux.
I think that we on Piercing the Veil, myself and the kids, are woke because at the end of each recording we say, you know what, next show will be better. And it never is.
I wouldn't say that. And finally, say a slang term easing into the mainstream, which is why it's reached the stage of the midweek drive, from some varieties of a dialect called African-American Vernacular English, sometimes called Ave. A-A-V-E, African-American Vernacular English, vernacular as in the popular. So in Ave, awake is often rendered as woke, as in I was sleeping, but now I'm woke.
I understand that one.
A. Exactly. E-I-O-U. Do all five vowels.
W-Y. Because in the Welsh alphabet, we have two extra vowels.
Of course.
We have adopted W and Y as vowels. I don't know why I mentioned that.
It's a perfect ending to the programme, I feel. Tomorrow morning, a whole range of things will be kicking off, so to speak, but I won't even tease you with them, apart from saying that Richard Fitzwilliams will be talking about that royal interview. Yeah, I know. Not a good decision for Prince Harry. Not a good decision, really, for Meghan. He's got other interesting things to share with us as well. Ian Lennox will be back with us. Gabriella Peralta, hopefully from Gibraltar, will be around. And we'll have a whole heap of other goodies as well. But now, Eloise, apart from that, you'll be seeing him probably in about 170 hours, no, maybe 200 hours from now, I think. You will have actually sort of met Robin Pierce and his family, probably, in person. Nice. I'm actually thinking Robin might, if he's not too busy, I mean, we're all going to be busy, it's going to be like two and a half days of hectic stuff, but he might actually be able to join us on one of our audio promenades. So actually, it would be Robin, Eva, Eloise, and myself, kind of randomly speaking to authors, writers, and various other bits and pieces.
I would love to, yeah.
Well, there we are then. Last two questions, please.
I'm going to get this right.
I know.
Robin,
intrinsic.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's been lovely.
And will you be joining us again?
I'd be delighted.
Of course he'll join us again.
No, right.
Because
oh,
it's
Halloween. No.
It's Halloween. Sugar, she'll be here. He will be here.
Hang on, which one of us did you just call Sugar?
He'll be back in a week from now. Robin Pearce, we salute you. Take care. Up next,
thank
after the news,
sir.
As far as Siren Radio is concerned, it's the Siren Cinema Music Show with Patrick Adams. Meanwhile, thank you to William Coles, Arthur Weingarten, Jeffrey Carver, Zoe Jameson, the contributor of the week as recently out, aligned to Tessa Snart with her tune of the week, Richard Edwards, Phil Leonis, and Robin Pearce, and Eloise Sheehan. Can we all say, stay woke? One, two, three.
Stay
woke.
Stay woke.